Let's take our seats. Mr. Kekana, are you back?
Yes, Chair,
Recording
I
in
am here.
progress.
Thank you, thank you. We now proceed. I recognize Honorable Hermans.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Mr. Kekana, I'll also be referring to the CX investigation in your affidavit, in particular paragraph 17. I know you have been asked questions about this already, but can I ask you, did you have sight of the provisional report before it was leaked?
Chair, no, I wasn't involved at all in the drafting or the publication of the provisional report. I remember, Chair, at that stage, I was not involved in also the investigation thereof.
So what, in your opinion, was the motive for the removal of the information that was omitted, that was removed from the report, in your opinion?
Chair, does that refer to the information about Mr. Billy Masehla?
The information that was removed from the report, that was omitted.
That was omitted from the CX report. I don't understand, Chair.
Is it Frederick Derry or
no? No, the CX report.
Okay.
If you go to paragraph 17, which refers to Mr. Billy Masehla, yes.
Yes. I'm not so sure why and how these documents relating to Mr. Billy Masehla were missing.
Then also, my next question relates to the Frieda Dairy project. I know Honorable Milam has asked you about it already in paragraph 14. Can you just tell us whether the public protector provided any reasons why the Gupta leaks should not be used in the investigation or included in the report?
Chair, we never got any reasons as to why we shouldn't follow the Gupta leaks.
And the omission, or whether it should be included in the report. You didn't get any reasons from the public protector.
Yes, Chair, we didn't get that. We were just informed by Mr. Ndo that we should not follow the lead involving the Gupta leaks.
Okay, and you did not raise any query in that regard?
No, Chair, we didn't.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Hermans. I now recognize Honorable Mgweba.
Thank you very much, Chair, and good afternoon, Honorable Members. Mr. Gagana, on the CX investigation on paragraph 15, you have indicated of the public protector provisional report leaked. Since you have started employment with the Office of the Public Protector in 2011, was it the common practice for some provisional report to be leaked, or was it the only report leaked?
If I remember, I think this was the, I think for me it was the first time that I hear that the provisional report was leaked. I'm not so sure whether there was any other report that was leaked. My memory is not serving me right on that one, but I think it was one of the incidences which I experienced that the report was leaked.
Thank you, Chair. And Mr. Gagano, you have stated in your affidavit on paragraph 54 open court. It therefore appears that the purpose of the precautionary suspension is to punish, to harass and victimize me as a result of me raising concerns of maladministration within the Office of the Public Protector. Can you please elaborate further? And secondly, to whom did you raise these concerns? Thank you very much, Chair.
Chair, to me, the way that the precautionary suspension happened, I felt that the process that was ensued affected, Chair, that because I was raising issues of maladministration within the office through the union, that might be why I was put on suspension, Chair.
You have not responded to the last question. To whom did you raise these concerns?
Oh, I did raise the concerns, Chair, to the PSA, the union, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Weber. I now recognize Honorable Gondwe.
Yeah, Leboha, Chairperson. Chairperson, can I ask that I
can't hear you.
Oh, yeah, Leboha, Chairperson. Can I ask that I ask him questions and then he can answer them afterwards? I just want to...
You want to throw your question then?
Yes, I don't want the camera
That's
on.
That's fine. What we'll do was we'll to make sure before he responds if he got all your questions.
Yes, that would be proper.
Go ahead.
Dumela Rekakana, is that okay? Can I ask you the questions and then you respond to them, not one by one, but, you know, after you've gotten wind of what I'm asking?
Chair, through you, I don't have an issue with that.
Okay, Kalibur. Rekakana, my first question is around the complaint that was initially lodged with the Office of the Public Protector in relation to the CS investigation. Who was the subject matter or focus of the investigation? Was it CX? Was it SSA? Was it Bangkok? And when the investigation was revisited under the auspices of Advocate Makrabani, did the subject matter or focus of the investigation remain the same or did it change? Can I proceed with the second one?
Yes, please.
With respect to the Black Land First, the organization, you submitted in your oral evidence that it was not allowed to come in as a complainant, but it was allowed to make submissions or inputs. Do you recall what those submissions or inputs were and if they bore any relevance to the investigation?
Thank you. Got that. Proceed.
My third question is that you stated in your oral evidence before the committee that during the meeting with the SSA, you do not recall there being a discussion on the vulnerability of the RAND and the Reserve Bank, but there were discussions rather on the Reserve Bank and the fact that it was prone to looting and its vulnerability during the apartheid era. Can you confirm what these discussions were based on? Were they based on the book by Mr. Goodson or on the comparative research articles that you made reference to in the course of your oral evidence? The next question also relates to the meeting with the SSA. You stated in your oral evidence before the committee that in your view, the meeting was an investigative meeting and you had prepared, and as such you had prepared questions that the public protector could ask in relation to the investigation, in lieu of the meeting with the SSA. Do you recall how many questions you prepared in this regard? Did you email these questions to her? Do you recall what some of those questions were that you prepared? And if you have recollection of any of this, can you share it with the committee, please? You also stated in your oral evidence before the committee that you took the view that the recommendation that the South African Reserve Bank be nationalized and the constitution amendment, the constitution amended rather, that you took the view that such a recommendation was irrelevant to the report. Can you explain to us why you took this view, that such a recommendation was irrelevant to the report? And yeah, we just want you to take us into your confidence around why you took this view, because you've mentioned on more than one occasion in the course of your oral evidence.
Don't forget to continue raising your voice.
Okay, I'll do that, Chairperson. And then, again, in your oral evidence before the committee, you stated that several draft reports, you know, were penned before the final report was released, and none of them contained the amendment. Rather, none of them contained the recommendation to amend the Constitution. Can you tell us what sort of recommendations were contained in the draft report? Again, in your oral evidence before the committee, and just touching on what was raised by Honorable Mgweba around the leaking of the preliminary report, do you perhaps know how and when this report was leaked and in whose possession the report was, in before it was leaked? My next set of questions relate to the FREDA investigation. The first set of questions I forgot to mention related to the CX investigation. In paragraph 40 of your affidavit, you state that the public protector issued an instruction that the Gupta leaks emails should not be used in the FREDA investigation. Please confirm if she issued this particular instruction to you personally or whether it was one of those instructions that was issued via Mr. Ndo. Because you mentioned that Mr. Ndo informed you that she had also issued an instruction that you should not make any findings against any politicians and not make any adverse findings against any politician, including the former premier of the Free State and the former MEC of agriculture. So I want to find out whether this, because there were three sets of instructions issued in this regard, and I just want to confirm whether that first instruction was issued to you personally or it was also issued via Ndatlendu. My second question around the FREDA investigation is, did you make adverse findings against politicians? Do you recall what those adverse findings were and who the implicated politicians were in this regard? In other words, did the Office of the Public Protector make adverse findings because you were instructed not to make adverse findings? So I'm trying to figure out whether there were any adverse findings made in the first place. When in responding to this question, please indicate what those findings were and who those findings were made against and whether they involved politicians, and if possible, state which politicians. My last question, Chairperson, you stated in the oral evidence before the committee that there was a collective effort to remove the adverse findings, which resulted in the issue of inflated goods being removed and the information relating to beneficiaries also being removed. Please explain what you mean by there was a collective effort and who was involved in that, in making that collective effort in removing the findings.
Thank you, Honorable Gondwe. Mr. Kekana, please respond one by one to all of those questions. Your platform is yours.
Thank you, Chair. Through you, Chair, I hope I've captured all the questions right. Chair, in regards to the first question, Chair, the focus of the investigation was on the South African Reserve Bank, the South African government, the SSA, and APSA. And whether the focus changed in regards to the parties, the focus it did not change, but were issues of nationalization and amendment of the constitution, which were new matters which I could ascribe as a change. Chair, in regards to the BLF, Chair, I don't recall what the BLF inputs were specifically, but Chair, I think I remember that I never used any of the inputs in the report, if memory serves me right, because I didn't think they were relevant to the investigation, Chair. Chair, on the meeting with the SSA relating to the discussion of the vulnerability of the South African Reserve Bank during the apartheid era, I'm not really sure what those documents were based on. They were certainly not based on Mr. Stephen Goodson's book, but I just don't know what those discussions emanated from. So again, in regards to the meeting with the SSA, I did prepare a pack of questions for the public protector. I don't specifically remember how many questions were there, Chair, but I had a number of pages with questions. And I'm afraid I'm not in possession of that, Chair. Thus, I can't share those questions, Chair. I don't also specifically remember the types of questions they were, but I would suspect they would involve their roles in the investigation, Chair. Chair, my notion as to why I viewed the issue of nationalization and amendment being irrelevant, Chair, was that our issues relating to the investigation, Chair, were primarily around the jurisdiction of the public protector, whether the South African government entered into an agreement with CX, whether the South African government failed to implement the CX report, and whether the South African government and SARB failed to recover monies owed by APSA, Chair. That's why, Chair, I am of the view that the issues revolving around the nationalization and amendment of the constitution were irrelevant according to my view. Chair, in regards to the draft reports, I think this is in regards to the Freder report, Chair. I think, Chair, in one of the draft reports that I saw, there were findings around political office bearers. And those findings, Chair, related to, if I remember, I can't specifically remember the specific findings in those drafts, but I remember, Chair, that the political office bearers knew about the irregularities that were happening in the project. Chair, on the leaking of the provisional report, Chair, Chair, I learned about the leaking of the provisional report in January 2017 when I was informed by the public protector. From my knowledge, I knew that the previous investigator who was working in the private office was working on that matter with the public protector. So from my knowledge, Chair, those two individuals were the ones that were working on the provisional report. In regards to the instructions, Chair, relating to the Gupta leaks, Chair, and again relating to findings against politicians, Chair, we only got the instructions from Mr. Ndo, and those instructions never came personally from the PP. I think the last question was the collective effort to remove things in the report and who was involved in that. In that meeting of the 8th of February, the people who were involved in the removal was in that meeting, or who were there, was the PP, Mr. Nema Sisi, Mr. Ndichen Raidani, Mr. Muntu Sithole, and myself. Chair, I'm not so sure whether I captured all the questions. If I haven't, I would like to request to be directed to one that I've missed, if I've missed any, and I will provide an answer.
No, thank you, Mr. Kekane. I will check, but I'll make sure that she doesn't smuggle any other question besides the ones that you've missed. I'm very alert to that.
I'm not going to smuggle anything, Chair. Rekha, can I ask if you remember, for you to be able to remove those adverse findings, they must have been, you know, contained somewhere. So my question was, what were those adverse findings? Did you make them? So I'm not entirely sure whether you answered that in your response.
So you're asking the actual adverse findings that were made, and that's in relation to the Freda Dairy?
Yes, in relation to the Freda investigation.
Thank you.
Because he said that there was a collective effort to remove those adverse findings. So you cannot remove them unless they exist, unless they're made, right?
Thank you. Mr. Kekana?
Yes, Chair. As I indicated, Chair, in the previous drafts that we had, and especially, remember, Chair, that the file came from the Free State office. So in the reports or draft reports that we had, I believe that there were adverse findings made against certain politicians, and those findings mostly, Chair, I can't remember the specific findings, but what I remember is that those political office bearers knew about the irregularities that were happening in the Freda project.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Thank you. I now recognize Honorable Lothritz.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good afternoon, Mr. Kekana. Now, quite a number of my questions have already been asked, so there are only a few remaining. I'm to ask the question and then request you to reply. Now, we have looked at the issue of the meeting with SSA and the questions that you prepared. Was it standard practice that you would prepare questions for the public protector before any such kind of meeting?
Yes, Chair. According to my knowledge, that was standard practice.
And was this the first time, or has there been other instances when your questions were not used?
Chair, that was the first time my questions were not used, Chair.
Thank you. Then also in terms of standard practice procedure, in your evidence, you refer to the handing over of your laptop to a firm of attorneys. Was that standard practice? Has it happened before that laptops of investigators, the senior investigator, is handed to a third party?
No, Chair, that was never standard procedure.
Do you have any knowledge whether this particular firm had any security clearance?
Chair, I didn't have any knowledge of that, and that was one of the issues I did raise with the employer as to whether this firm has security clearance or not.
To your knowledge, was the laptop accessed in the presence of anyone from the Office of the Public Protector?
Chair, I don't have knowledge of that.
Thank you very much. Mr. Kekana, if we now turn to, I'm hesitant to call it experts, but the economists. Now, in your investigations and your experience since 2011 at the Office of Public Protector, how is it determined would be considered to be, for example, an economist or someone who could provide valuable information? Is there an operating procedure, a policy to do that?
I'm not aware of that procedure, but I would think that if someone was requested or required to assist the public protector, it would go through a formal process of getting, maybe going through procurement processes, or maybe the public protector could maybe motivate for such. It would be well known beforehand that we require such an expert on a particular field. I remember in my investigations when I needed experts, maybe engineers, I give that example because I did request for an expert in one of the investigations. One had to go through the procurement process.
Thank you. Mr. Kekana, I now want to go to the recommendation to review or amend the Constitution. This has been discussed earlier in your testimony, and if I look at Section 224 of the Constitution, it states clearly that the primary object of the South African Reserve Bank is to protect the value of the currency. Now, if I look at what we have been presented with and the proposal for a recommendation, that is quite a dramatic move from protection of the currency to promotion. And I would like to know, because this morning we were also introduced to the document by Niels van der Merwe. Now, in relation to that, before I go further on the actual amendment, proposed amendment, who requested or instructed Niels van der Merwe to do this comparative study?
I think the PP did that because I was not in a position to instruct Advocate Niels van der Merwe because he was my senior at the time.
Thank you. And in this document, and I also asked this morning whether this is the full document that we have at our disposal, I can only find two proposals and only one referring to Section 224 of the Constitution, and that is to be reviewed to ensure, that is a 3.9, that as an organ of state, the Reserve Bank is accountable to Parliament to ensure that it implements its powers in a legitimate manner while at all the time maintaining the important independence of the bank. And a bit higher up in this comparative study, at 3.7, it is also noted that an independent central bank is a better guarantee of the value of the currency and thus of a generally sound economic basis for the state's budgetary policies. Now, I cannot really find this in the proposed recommendation in terms of changing 224 to go from protection of the currency to actually remove that. So in your opinion, Mr. Gekana, did the public protector rely on this comparative study done on her, as you say, possibly her instruction, to draft that recommendation?
Through you, Chair, I'm not so sure. I am also not so sure whether this information from Advocate Niels van der Merwe came before we publicized the final report or after we publicized the final report. I'm not so sure whether it also influenced the proposal to amend the Constitution. 'Cause I'm really not so sure or recall what was Neil's brief in regard to drafting this comparative study.
Okay, thank you. I see that the front page does indicate that these would be the actual principles applicable to the independence and governance of the South African Reserve Bank and proposals for the review of sections 223 to 225 of the Constitution. So I think that would have been the brief. But let's leave it there. Mr. Gekana, I just want to, for my own clarity and to make sure that I heard you correctly, in terms of this recommendation to amend the Constitution, was your evidence earlier, I think on one of the questions, that it was not informed by the books of Stephen Goodson? Did I hear correctly?
Yes, this amendment that we received came straight from the SSA. The amendment or the note on TK4, Mr. Goodson never made any input on it. It came directly from the SSA.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Lautrit. I now recognize Honorable Lomisa.
Thank you, Chairperson. Colleagues, Mr. Kekana, on a number of occasions, when Advocate Mpofu asked you questions, you kept on saying you don't remember. The question is, do you think the evidence leader gave you enough time to prepare for your appearance before this committee? If the answer is not in the affirmative, Would you wish to be given more time to respond in writing to areas you said you don't remember? Lastly, my question is directed to the evidence leader. Are you planning to call some of the people who attended meetings with the public protector, especially on Reserve Bank-related discussions, so that we can hear both sides? We've heard his version, but it is important that since he was not working alone with the public protector, sometimes you hear some names being mentioned. We would like you to respond on that. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Lomisa. Maybe let's start with Mr. Kekana. You got that question?
Yes, Chair, I got that question. Chair, through you, Chair, it must be emphasized that I really didn't want to come and testify to the commission and or to the committee. And one of the reasons that I did advance, Chair, was that my memory in regard to certain events, and especially if events that had happened some time ago, was impaired. Chair, I don't think under the circumstances I was given time or more time to prepare for the discourse that we've having the past 2 days, Chair. But Chair, I believe that I have answered all the questions to the best of what I could remember, Chair. If maybe I could have been provided with documents or emails from the Public Protector's Office, I think I could have contributed more, especially on the things that I couldn't recollect on, Chair.
Thank you. Any follow-up on him? Thank you, Mr. Lomisa. Advocate Bauer?
We have endeavored to be guided by the motion in respect of the evidence we are calling. And if the member's question is, are we going to be calling some of the names that have been referred to today, that is our intent.
Thank you. Mambile Nkulu. Thank you. I now recognize Honorable Melda.
Thank you, Chairperson. Through you, I've been covered to a certain extent by some of the questions asked by some of the colleagues, but I've got 6 questions for Mr. Kekane. I think they are straight questions. I think the answers could also be short and brief. I want to start off by this, dealing with the same point that General Holomisa just now made. During your cross-examination, Advocate Mpofu wanted the committee to believe that we should not give any value to your testimony because, as he put it, because of your impaired memory. Now, your evidence in Maine was basically based on your affidavit, which was drawn up about 3 years ago. Am I correct if I say that obviously your memory must have been much better because 3 years ago when you drafted the affidavit, it was much closer to the events? Secondly, in the same vein, many of the things that you were questioned about are things that happened more than 5 years ago. And am I correct to say that most of the members of the committee, as well as most members of the bar, won't be able to recollect what's in emails of 5 years ago without having the privilege to go through them again and to refresh your memory? Am I correct?
Chair, that would be correct.
Thank you, Chairperson. The second question I would like to ask you is, you were making the point that the SSA was involved in the formulation of the constitutional amendment. And then Advocate Mpofu went through a whole process to convince the committee differently, and he was asking you all kinds of questions about the need that there was a study done, a comparative study in terms of other economic models, et cetera, et cetera. And then he referred to what he called your theory. That was his words, your theory. Now, I want to ask you, in paragraph 26 of your founding affidavit, you say the following. All around 6 June 27, I attended a meeting with Advocate Nkubuane and representatives from SSA, namely Mr. Moodley and Mr. James Ramobulane. And then you go on in the next paragraph, and you say the following in paragraph 27. During the meeting, Mr. Moodley produced a single page which contained a draft of the proposed recommendations which were to be inserted into the final report. In terms of your recollection, in terms of how you worded this in the affidavit, would you say that that is a theory, or is that something that you personally experienced because you were there when this happened?
So I would like to put it as an experience rather than a theory.
You were there. It's not a theory. You were there.
I was there, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Kekane. Thirdly, Chairperson, Mr. Mpofu tried to make the point throughout during cross-examination that it was absolutely normal for the SSA to interact with the public protector because of a contract that was signed between the SSA and CX. And because of that, it was absolutely normal that there should be interaction between the SSA and the Public Protector's Office. Would you agree that there's a huge difference between interacting with a company like CX that investigated possible misappropriation of funds on the one hand, and on the other hand, where SSA provides the exact wording to change the core mandate of the Reserve Bank as a proposal in the Constitution? Would you agree that there's a complete difference between interacting in terms of a normal contract where there was an investigation up to the point where the Public Protector's Office interacts with SSA and a specific wording of amendment of the Constitution comes out of that process?
I agree there is a difference.
Thank you, Mr. Kekane. My fourth question, it deals with paragraph 25 where you refer to PK3, and that is a document which did not form part of the Rule 53 proceedings, the record. And Advocate Mpofu tried to make the point that you were responsible for providing that record, and if that specific email from the SSA was not in that record, is Mr. Kekane still on the system, Chair?
Yes, I'm still here, Chair.
Thank you, thank you. Advocate Mpofu made the point that if that specific email from SSA was not in the Rule 53 record, it's because you didn't put it there. I want to ask you the following. Is it possible that somebody in the office who may have had access to the file could have removed that specific email before you put the record together? And it's not a question of it could be any of 60 million South Africans. It needed to be somebody in the Public Protector's Office. Is that a possibility?
Chair, I think on what I testified on was that I did give the complete file or record of the investigation to Mr. Namasisi. From or what happened thereafter, Chair, I'm not so sure. There could have been a possibility, but I couldn't attest to that, Chair.
Thank you. My first question, Chairperson, to Mr. Kekane is the following. Mr. Mpofu made a point on a number of occasions that it's absolutely normal that people sometimes make suggestions and proposals in terms of amendments of the Constitution. And by arguing that, he argued to say, but the fact that the public protected it the same is an absolute normal thing, it's nothing strange, etc. However, we all know that when it comes to the remedial action of the public protector, everyone is bound by that remedial action, and you have to comply with that remedial action. In terms of the report of the public protector, she instructed with remedial action the chairperson of Parliament's Justice Committee, Dr. Motsekga, to start proceedings to amend the Constitution. Would you agree that that is something completely different from somebody who would suggest that maybe we should look into some provision in the Constitution?
Okay, I agree.
Thank you, Chairperson. My last question deals with the two emails. The first email, that's one that deals with the quality assurance. And there was at some stage some uncertainty in terms of the date. The date of the first email was the 18th of May, 2017. And the second email was a month later on the 17th of June. Are we talking about the same report when these two emails were relevant? And in one of those two emails, there's a part that says, we also, including the public protector, will have to go through this report page by page. Did that actually happen?
Sorry, Chair, I think there are two questions in there. Can the Honourable Member please repeat that for me, Chair?
Let me try. The first question deals with the first email of the 18th of May. And the second email is a month later on the 17th of June. And in the second email, it says that the other gentleman is not here today. But this is a month later. So it, obviously, if it deals with the same report, it must be he's not here on that day. It doesn't mean he's not been there for the last month if he should have done the quality assurance. The question I'm asking is, in one of those two emails, there's a provision that says, or a paragraph that says, and I think it's the one that comes from the public protector, which says the three of us will have to go through this document or this report page by page. It implies that the public protector will also have to go page by page. Do you know if that actually happened?
Chair, I don't recall that happening, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm finished.
Thank you. Before I proceed to the next speaker, I just want to recognize, I see Advocate Mpofu, you have your hand up.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chair. Yes, no, I just want to point something out that I don't think what Honorable Mulder is doing is correct, Chair, because I don't want to interrupt the questioning, but it's completely valueless to ask the witness whether he agrees with the question that I put. I mean, so what, whether he agrees or doesn't agree with the question that I put to him. But what's more important is not, for me not to be misrepresented. I really don't take kindly to that. Honorable Mulder said that, I said that the witness should not be believed because of his memory, impaired memory. Now, that's a half-truth. It's not even a half-truth, actually. It's a third or less than that. So if you're going to quote me fully, and please do not misrepresent what I said. Because I said that, yes, I did tell you about the memory, but I also said that the witness is because he's dishonest and evasive and a whole lot of other things. So if you either ask your question, don't say Advocate Mpofu say this, because if you're going to say that, then you must say exactly what I said. I take strong of exception to being used as a Trojan horse for questions, using things that I did not say or distorting what I said or saying only a part of it. So all questions must not start with Advocate Mpofu said this and so on, and the witness only has to say yes, because that's like legal argument. I'm here if anybody wants to argue with me, not through the witness.
Thank you, Advocate Mpofu. Honorable Mellor.
Yes, Chairperson. Luckily, no one will tell members of parliament how they should ask questions. Nobody will tell us that. That's our job, to do what we need to do. Secondly, all of us are rather intelligent and we could understand exactly the line of questioning that was put to the witness in terms of cross-examination and the impression that was created in terms of that line of questioning. So surely it's my right to ask that of the Honourable the witness to make clear that I understand that he understood exactly what was also said. I did not misrepresent Mr. Mpofu. As a matter of fact, I could go further, but I'm not going to waste the time of the committee and deal with that allegation of the dishonesty and everything in that regard. I didn't think it's necessary. The main thrust was that this witness did not remember what happened. I thought it was important to give him the opportunity to clarify that as well. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. Thank you, Honourable Mulder. maybe before I proceed, the point I'm sharing you on, Advocate Mpofu, is being you would wish that you are quoted in verbatim and not being misrepresented. I think that's a strong point that you are raising. I take note of that.
Thank you, Chair. That's all. That's all I wanted. Thank you, Chairperson. I don't want to belabor the point. Yeah, I'm just saying, Honorable Musa can ask any question he wants, but he mustn't preface it by saying Advocate Mpofu says this. If he wants to do that, then it's probably accurate.
Thank you, Advocate Mpofu. I now recognize Honorable Seke. Honorable Seke.
Thank you very much, Che. And good afternoon, Tate Kekana.
Good afternoon, Honorable Member.
Flowing from the question which was raised by Honorable Gondwe on the Friede Dairy Project, the report made mention of two politicians who were removed in the original report. Were these the only politicians or public representatives implicated and removed in the initial report?
Yes, if that's my recollection of events.
Thank you very much. In your opinion, did the PP try to protect the public relating to the beneficiaries of Friede Dairy Project?
In my view, Chair, no, because we never spoke about them in the report, Chair.
Okay, thank you. The third one, in your view, did the PP try to protect politicians at the expense of the public in this regard?
I don't want to express a view on that because I wouldn't be sure. I didn't get any reasons as to why we needed to remove politicians from the report, Chair. So, Chair, I'm afraid to have a view on that, Chair.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Kekana. In your opinion, I know the question has been raised several times, but maybe I'll put it in the other context. In your opinion, what was the reason why the PP was interested in including the submission of the Black Land Fest in the CIX investigation, despite the fact that they were not involved in the matter?
I still can't offer any view on that, Chair. I don't know even the reasons why the PP had allowed for BLF to provide submissions. So I wouldn't be sure of that, Chair.
Thanks very much, Tatekana. The last question it was also asked in reference to paragraph 24 of your affidavit. Mr. Kekana, you indicated the idea of nationalization of the Reserve Bank came from the PP, but the wording of the amendment in the report came from the SSA. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's correct, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Grace Seke. I now recognize Honorable Zungula.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Kekana, my first question would be, is it uncommon for recommendations to come from those interviewed during the investigations?
Yes, Chair, it would be uncommon, Chair.
So all of the recommendations, they would not take into account the people that were interviewed?
No, Chair, the recommendations, Chair, would come from the PP, Chair, as the public protector, Chair.
After taking into account the interviews, obviously.
Yes, the interviews and all the evidence that she had to consider.
Therefore, it's not common for the recommendations to also come from those interviews.
No, Chair, it's not common.
No. All right. Okay, let me move on, because just now you just agreed that the recommendations, they do come from the PP who takes into account the interviews. Okay. So my next question is, in your evidence, you said you complied with the instruction to make amendments to the Constitution, although you did not fully understand what the amendments sought to achieve, and you said they were irrelevant. Is that correct?
That's correct, Chair.
So that instruction, was it unlawful from your perspective because you did not understand and it was irrelevant?
Chair, I would not comment on whether the instruction was lawful or not, but at the time I had to obey the PP instructions.
So you mean you would willfully obey any type of instruction?
Chair, I'd like to explain that from the context of the circumstances, I was new in the private office and I was new in working with the PP. And Chair, if she gave me an instruction, I wouldn't want to be seen to disobey that instruction, because obviously I might be charged subsequent to not following an instruction, Chair.
So you're saying even if the instruction was unlawful, you would carry or implement that instruction?
Chair, I would, in fear of recrimination.
Okay, all right. Then let's go to the issue of the Frede report. You state that the PP instructed that politicians must be removed. I know a couple of members asked for a clear indication where exactly were those politicians implicated for them to be removed. You can't remove something that is not there. So are you able to back up your claims with any form of evidence?
Chair, I cannot back that with any form of evidence, but in my oral testimony, Chair, I have indicated that I recall seeing those adverse findings in our previous drafts.
Which draft? There's a provisional report by the then public protector, which is on November 2014. So are you referring to that draft?
I'm referring to unsigned drafts that were made by our Free State Provincial Office.
Okay, so as you are saying, there's no evidence to back up your claim?
Chair, I don't have that evidence at my disposal.
All right. Then these instructions that came from Mr. Ndo, did you ever confirm with the PP if indeed she gave such instructions?
No, I did not confirm with the PP.
So you did not think you should do due diligence by confirming that these instructions that would somewhat damage the investigation, so you just willfully complied with an instruction based on a hearsay from Mr. Ndo?
Chair, I followed the instruction that was given to me by my senior. At the time, Chair, I did not have a good relationship with the PP, so I didn't see fit that I should go to the PP and make sure whether Mr. Ndo was instructing us properly according to the PP's instructions.
But in your testimony now, you are alluding or placing all of the responsibility of those instructions on the PP, not on Mr. Ndo. Do you think that is fair?
I have indicated all along, Chair, that Mr. Ndo was the one who informed us that the instructions come from the PP. And Chair, I've also indicated, Chair, that I never got any direct instructions from the PP in regards to the Gupta links and in regards to removal of politicians from the report.
All right, okay. Let's go to the Gupta links, where you similarly, you state that Mr. Ndol said there must be no investigation. However, there's an email from a PP, which is on the 13th of July, 2017. It's sent to the CEO, PPSACO Hamilton Samuel Erika Silias, where the CEO is instructed to follow up with the Free State to prepare letters to the Premier, MEC, and Minister Zwane on the issue of the Gupta leaks based on the information that came from the Gupta leaks. What do you have to say about that now that there is an email, but in your testimony, you are saying that there was an instruction to ignore or not do anything based on the Gupta leaks?
Okay, I'm not aware of that email, and I don't think in July 2017 I was involved in the matter, Chair. So I'm really not aware of that, Chair. I'm only aware of what I was instructed to do by Mr. Ndol.
Okay. My second last question. The meeting with Advocate McDonnell and the SSA, there were no minutes recorded or no notes recorded. Am I correct?
Chair, we couldn't find any form of record in regards to Billy Masetla minutes, the interview itself, the transcript. We couldn't find anything, Chair.
But you do know that a meeting did take place between Advocate Madonsela and SSA?
Yes, Chair. I was informed by the previous investigator in the private office that records of that minutes or that meeting did exist.
Oh, and no minutes or notes or any form of recordings, you could not find any of that?
We could not find any of that, Chair.
Then why would you characterize the non-taking of minutes between SSA and Advocate Mkhwebane as odd?
Chair, it's odd because the normal procedure was to record, Chair, all meetings and minutes, Chair.
However, this one between Advocate Madonsela was not recorded.
I didn't say it was not recorded. I said we could not find any recording of it.
Remember, if something is recorded, definitely one way or the other, there would be some form of record of minutes, notes, or anything that confirms that a recording did take place.
Okay, according to my personal knowledge, I was informed by the previous investigator that such a record did exist. But when we looked for the record, we could not find the chair.
Okay, no, let's move on. Then you drafted the CS report, am I correct?
That's correct.
Who was responsible for the quality assurance?
Chair, as I've indicated, it was a process. The investigator would quality assure the report, which meant in the circumstances myself. And then the report would also be quality assured by the quality assurance unit. That would have been Mr. Matawe. And the PP would do a final quality assurance before she signs the report.
By herself or by instructing either yourself or any department that deals with quality assurance?
To your last question you ask.
I don't understand
the question. Let me ask my last question then.
Go ahead, Mr. Isungula.
Yeah, so my last question is, the disciplinary hearing found that you were dishonest. On your affidavit, you make claims that are not backed up with any form of evidence, and you are saying your memory is impaired to a certain extent. That is why you can't recall most or some of the things that would have transpired long ago. Now, and you know, when Advocate Mpofu was asking about that dishonest issue, you were very, very evasive on answering that particular issue. Why would the committee, or why should the committee take your evidence, you know, as the gospel truth or as the truth, whereas firstly, you're found to be dishonest, and the CCNA report states that your dismissal for gross misconduct was fair, meaning you are not a person of integrity. Why should a committee take your testimony as a gospel truth?
Chair, I answered all the questions to the best of my knowledge and truthfully so, Chair. And Chair, the remarks by the chairperson of the disciplinary hearing and the award issued by the CCMA, I disagree with them, and that's why there's a pending matter at the Labour Court in respect to that. So, Chair, I don't consider the issues emanating around the findings in the disciplinary hearing and the CCMA being final, Chair. That's why I'm at the Labour Court. But I would like to emphasize, Chair, that I answered all the questions to the best of my ability and truthfully so, Chair.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Zungula. May I just make a request that you share with the center of the committee the email of the 13th of July, 2017, that came from the PP to a range of people. We don't have that email. Please share it. Thank you. I now proceed to the next speaker. I recognize Honorable Luzipho. Okay, fine. Thank you. Honorable Mataule.
Thank you.
That's a dive, Laura.
Greetings, Mr. Gakane.
Good afternoon, Honorable Member.
Let's go to paragraph 15 of your affidavit, where you talk about the provisional report, which was never quality assured, but leaked. And you notice that it contained numerous errors and was missing vital information. Now, you are saying that you informed Advocate Mukwebane of the errors and missing information verbally in your meetings in her office, and Advocate Mukwebane indicated to you that these issues that you had raised should be attended to. Would you say she was agreeing with you?
That's correct, Chair.
Okay. Now, there are two sets of emails that were projected here. In the first one, it appears that Advocate Mukwebane was saying that there should be a third party to look at the report with a different eye. Is that correct?
I remember that the email for May, that's the one that the advocate indicated that there should be a third eye looking on it. Am I correct?
I'm not sure. I thought I would get that information. But that's fine.
Well, I was shown those emails, Chair, today after some time, but I think the first email, Chair, was the one in May, where Advocate Mukwebane requested that a third eye look at the draft.
Okay. So if you were to link the the agreement that these issues should be dealt with from Advocate Mkhwebane and this email, would you say that there was an attempt to adhere to your request?
Sorry, Chair, I'm a bit confused. I don't know what request I made. Is it the request that, or the request that Advocate Mkhwebane, that I should correct the errors or attend to the errors and the missing information?
Yes.
Chair, I wouldn't like to link that with the emails for May 2017 and June 2017, because at that time, Chair, when I indicated those things, Chair, I hadn't yet started to work on even the investigation or the report. I just read the provisional report at that time, Chair.
Thank you. Working in a very important office like the Office of the Public Protector, when you go into a meeting and take notes, surely you pay serious attention to details, isn't so?
Well, usually, yes, you would try and do that.
And normally what would go into your notes, would it be only important issues or just anything that is being said, or anything and everything that is being said, or only important issues?
Chair, in making written recordals, I would try to record everything that's been mentioned, but if maybe the speakers are too fast, then I would just indicate brief discussion, or if they maybe mention something, I'll just put it as a mention. But yeah, Chair, I think that would be the process, Chair.
So it's possible that the in your notes, "heath," the word "heath," signified something that important, that was important said in the meeting?
Chair, as I indicated in my testimony, in my notes, I think the main notes, I did indicate that he was a reference point, but to my recollection, Chair, we did not discuss his, but referred to the investigation of his and also the investigation by Davis, if I'm correct, Chair.
Okay. When you do an investigation, Mr. Kekane, and quality assure it before it goes to the quality assurance unit, would you say you do it in such a way that it would meet international standards?
I'm not so sure about international standards, Chair, but we would try to meet the standard operating procedures in the office or the guidelines that have been provided in the office.
To an extent that if it was not to find its way to the quality assurance unit, you wouldn't expect material issues to appear?
Yes, Chair.
Is that an answer?
I think that the purpose of quality assurance would...
My apologies.
Come again, Mr. Kekane.
Chair, I just lost connection for some time, Chair. I couldn't...
Yeah.
Yes, you... but Chair... Sorry, Chair.
Yeah, you were on quality assurance as part of your response.
Yes, Chair. I was indicating, Chair, that in regards to quality assurance, the main purpose would be adherence to the guidelines or the standard operating procedures in terms of report writing in the office, and obviously to eliminate errors, ascertain the law, especially the law to the facts. So that would be the process in quality assurance, just to make sure that the report is, for lack of a better word, solid.
So if it was not the issue of process, meaning a report is quality assured by you, it goes to the quality assurance unit and it goes to the public protect. If it was to happen that it jumps the quality assurance unit, but you quality assured it, and then it is assigned by the public protect, would you say that report is not up to standard?
Yes, Chair, I would say that, because then it wouldn't have gone through all the levels of quality assurance.
Okay. There was a point, and this is my second, there was a point where you said you read the dairy farm report, Friede, but at some point you had no appetite to read it further. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. I did indicate that I read partially the report and I didn't have the appetite to read it further, Chair.
And for you to get to a point where you conclude that the politicians that allegedly Advocate Mukhwebane had instructed that they are not implicated, you would have to read the report to find that that has happened, that instruction has been carried on?
Well, Chair, I knew because remember I was also involved in the removal of the information before it was even published. So more or less, I knew what was in the report.
Okay. In the investigation of CX, during the investigation, did you have a meeting with the implicated parties, and particularly National Treasury and the South African Reserve Bank? If not, why did you not meet them? And if yes, were their submissions included in the final report?
Chair, there was a meeting with the South African Reserve Bank before I took over the matter. And we did also get a response from the South African Reserve Bank in regards to the provisional report. In relation to National Treasury, I'm not so sure whether there was a meeting prior to me handling the matter, but I know that we never had a meeting with them, but we did have a response from them in regards to the provisional report, and both responses were in the final report.
Thank you. Lastly, in your affidavit in page 1, number 1, you say that I am an adult male living in Pretoria, employed in the Office of the Public Protector of South Africa as a senior manager. I was comparing your affidavit with that of other people who came, especially Mr. Lochenberg. He says he was a former employee of SARS. Is there a reason why you still call yourself an employee at this moment? Is there a message that you are trying to convey to the committee? I'm asking this because there was a back and forth around your dismissal.
Are you reading from that protected disclosure, which would have been made in 2019?
That's the affidavit.
Yes. Okay, Mr. Kekan.
When I deposed the affidavit in December 2019, I was still an employee of the Public Protector South Africa.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Masaule. Honorable Siabi. Just before you proceed, Honorable Siabi, I see the head of Advocate Mbofu.
Thank you, Chair. I'm sure it was a slip of the tongue, but please don't act as if you have prejudged some of the disputed issues. It is not a protected disclosure, or at least that's a disputed issue, whether it's a protected disclosure. So we don't want to get the impression that that issue has been predetermined.
Thank you, Mr. Mpofu. That order is not sustained. There's nothing predetermined in these proceedings. Thank you.
Chairperson. No, Chair, can I please intervene then?
To what was then, for?
Yes, no, okay. Whether it's predetermined or not predetermined, I'm saying that the Chair should not then categorize a disputed issue as A or B if it's disputed, because that gives the impression that it's predetermined when it comes from the Chair. So rather use a neutral term or not enter the debate, because otherwise what are we doing here if our inputs are not going to be considered, or rather if they are considered already and therefore they won't enter the final debate.
Thank you, Honorable Mbofu. Honorable Siabi.
Thank you, Chair. Can I start with a request, Chair? If ever it's lawful, if it's not lawful, you will tell me. Most of the times we are given the judgments of the High Court or the Concord. Can I request that where we're given a majority judgment of the Concord, for example, and there's a minority judgment, we be supplied with that also. If it's a High Court, just to be advised whether it was a full bench or not. If that is acceptable, Chair, I'll really request that.
That's in order.
Can I now direct my questions to Mr. Kekana? Good afternoon, Mr. Kekana.
Good afternoon, Honorable Member.
Thank you. When were you employed by the PP?
I started with the PP in October 2011.
When were you dismissed by the PP?
I was dismissed in September 2020.
When were you transferred to and from the private office?
Chair, I was transferred from the private office. Sorry, Chair, can I get clarity on that? Does the Honorable Member mean my time when I moved from the private office to provincial investigation integration, or from the quality assurance unit to the private office? Just need clarity on that, Chair.
Maybe let me split it, Chair. When were you transferred to the private office?
January 2017.
When were you transferred from the private office?
Sorry, Chair. Sir, I was transferred from Quality Assurance Unit.
No. You worked in the private office, but at some stage, you were removed from the private office.
Yes. Yes, Chair, that's correct.
When was that?
I was removed in November 2017, Chair.
Okay, thanks. In your statement, you said you were told by the HR that you were transferred to the private office. Did you ask questions why?
No, Chair. I didn't ask questions why. I was approached, Chair, if I would be interested in transferring to the private office, and I didn't have any issues.
Again, you were told by HR that you are transferred or removed from the private office. Did you ask questions why?
Yes, I did ask questions why.
And somewhere you say those questions were directed to the PP. Is that correct?
Yes. Chair, on paragraph 37 of my affidavit, I do state that when I asked why, I was told that the PP indicated that I talked too much with the attorneys representing the office.
Did you by any chance try to verify that information with the PP directly?
Chair, I did approach the PP in her office, and Chair, I didn't ask for reasons. I just indicated to her, Chair, that I didn't understand why I was leaving, but I accepted the decision.
Okay, thanks very much. In your statement, we're giving evidence, you say some of the information, I mean the report you submitted to your senior, which seemingly later was changed, you did not have a copy of that. My question is to check whether the office, you didn't have a system of having a copy file or having a system of somebody who receives information from you signs for it and you keep a copy.
Okay, can I just be given clarity on which copy of the report we're referring to now?
Now you said, I think it's the, you said in one of the reports that you prepared, I think it's the CIX report, Chairperson. There was information, the final report was not the same as what you drafted. Am I correct? Or am I misrepresenting you?
Chair, I'm not so sure. Chair, I did indicate that the additions or the change of focus in the final CX report had to do with the amendment of the Constitution and nationalization. That's what I recall, Chair, unless if I'm not answering the question correctly.
Okay, maybe I didn't hear you well. My last two questions, Chair. Based on your testimony, would you conclude that the PP is not fit for office?
Chair, I really don't want to express a view on that. I did report instances where I observed what I deemed as improper conduct from the PP, Chair. And I did submit that to the Speaker and the Presidency at the time. Chair, I believe that this committee is tasked with doing that, Chair, and I would not like to venture into that space, Chair.
Okay, maybe let me put it this way. In your opinion, does the behavior of the PP constitute improper and or misconduct?
In my opinion, and in relation to the PDA affidavit which I deposed, Chair, I considered the actions by the PP to be improper in my view.
My last question, Chair. You said, if I heard you well, you said you were not ready to testify before the committee. Can you just take us through again?
Chair, I did indicate that I was or am reluctant to testify to the committee, Chair, and I think I advanced three reasons, Chair. And I think the first one was that I felt that since this is a public discourse, that my privacy would be affected, Chair. And secondly, Chair, I did indicate that my recollection of certain events may be impaired due to a number of years that these incidences have happened. And I think thirdly, Chair, I indicated that some of the issues were pending at the Labour Court, and I don't want to prejudice that process.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Siabe, and thank you, Mr. Kekane. Before I recognize Honourable Nodada, I see your hand, Advocate Mbofu.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to place something on the record. I don't want to debate it necessarily, but to place it as a formal complaint from us, Chair. I don't know if you understood the point I was trying to make before, because you did not make a ruling on it. You just ignored me. The point I was making was, Chair, when there is it's not done, this, when there is a point that is disputed, such as whether that statement is a protected disclosure or not, which we spent considerable amount of time in, unless if we are here just to waste our time, then the chair cannot be predetermining an issue like that. You will remember...
Can I finish, please? I thought you had raised your hand in relation to an issue that would have been raised by the last speaker. Because what you are now doing, you are repeating the same point that you made before I handed over to the next speaker.
No, I'm making a complaint, Chair. I'm not, it's a different matter. I'm not responding to the last speaker. I'm lodging a formal complaint. Can I be allowed to do that?
I will allow you to do that once I just conclude my speakers.
No, Chairperson. That's fine.
Thank you. I now recognize Honorable Nodat.
Thank you so much, Chair. Before I start, can I just check my audible, Chair?
You are audible.
All right. Good evening, Chair, and good evening to the committee and everybody that is on the platform. Chair, just as an upfront, I just want to say that the majority of my questions are actually directed to the public protector. The questions that I wanted to ask are largely covered by previous speaker, in particular Honorable Miner. But there's just, you know, two issues that I would like to just quickly put into Chair. And if I can just ask Mr. Kekana, you know, to answer after each question that I pose. Good evening, Mr. Kekana.
Good evening, Honourable Member.
So the Kekana, as per your evidence that you've deposed to this committee that you want us to consider, would you say that your evidence relates to grounds of misconduct and incompetence in relation to the public protector on the following issues that you want us to consider? One, in relation to the South African Reserve Bank report, which ultimately has been ruled on by the courts, is that correct?
Chair, it's correct that I reported improper behavior in regards to the CX report, Chair, or CX investigation, Chair.
Thank you. The second one would relate to the Freya Dieri report, which has also been ruled upon by the courts up to the constitutional court level. Is that correct?
That's correct, Chair.
The third one would then be in relation to what you have alleged as not being protected as an employee or being harassed. Is that correct?
So it is correct that I also reported on harassment and intimidation by the Office of the Public Protector, Chair. That's correct.
Would it be correct to deduce that based on the evidence that you submitted today, that you rely, when you indicate that this is what you want us to consider around incompetence, improper behavior, misconduct, that you rely mainly or supported beyond the sequence of events that you stated to us today, to the court rulings that have been made regarding the CX report as well as the Freya Dieri report, which in some instances corroborates what you have presented to us today as evidence.
Chair, I would be more comfortable that I relied on the personal knowledge that I had, which is alluded in the affidavit with the annexures, Chair. I never mentioned any court judgments, but I just mentioned that in the court judgments that the reports were set aside. But I did not place much reliance on those judgments, Chair. I only relied on the information that was in my personal disposal.
Absolutely. There's been a statement that has been made by Advocate Mbo, who represents the public protector, and the quoting verbatim that you know, these court judgments, in fact, wrong, that was the word that was used. Do you believe that based on you referencing them in evidence, this committee should consider those judgments on the CX report as well as the Freya Dieri report?
Chair, that's difficult for me to pronounce on. I think the committee should, it's within the committee's purview, but I think the committee should consider what is relevant to them and make an adequate decision around what they consider as relevant evidence, Chair.
Just pause, Honourable Nodata, Advocate Mpofu, I see your hand.
No, thanks, it's fine, Chair. Really. Thank you, sir. I
waive
my right to speak.
Okay. Thank you, Advocate Mpofu. Honourable Nodada.
Thank you so much, Chair. Mr. Kekana, according to the affidavit that you proposed, paragraph 33, you indicate there that, if we can just go there, but you indicate there that Advocate Mkwebana, indicated to you that during the review proceedings that you know, you should not or you should omit some information in the rules of the clear record. Did she give you reasons as to why you should do that, particularly the information in relation to the investigation that she had done in her tenure in relation to the CX investigation?
Chair, I do recall that, Chair, she advanced no reasons as to why we should omit those draft reports.
Okay, you further go on to say there has been a telephone conversation where she vehemently disagreed with you sharing that information. What was that conversation? Do you recall that conversation?
What I recall is that I did inform the counsel at the time and the attorneys that the PP wished to exclude our drafts from the record. And I informed the counsel and the attorneys who resisted that, and I reported back to the public protector that counsel and attorneys were resisting that, and she also had her view that no, these things should not be transmitted in the record, but I don't remember her advancing any reasons to me as to why they should be omitted.
Right, Chair, I'm going to request that maybe I'll get guidance from the evidence leader herself. If that particular information can be made available to us in transcript as to what maybe the reasons would have been that some information be omitted from the Rule 53 record by the public protector, and maybe after I've done with my questions, then maybe Advocate Bowen herself can give direction as to what can happen to the vice president.
Yeah,
just the last
you're actually at the end of your limit, so I'm not sure if you want to proceed at the end of it, because I might have to cut you.
Chair, I think let me leave it there for now, because
we're still going to the project. Thank you. Thank you.
That's all right.
Thank you, Honorable Notata. I now recognize Honorable Nagude.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Good afternoon, Mr. Kekana.
Good afternoon, Honorable Member.
Thank you very much. Honorable, Mr. Kekana, through you, Chairperson. On your affidavit, paragraph 33, you said that the draft which were prepared during her predecessor, that is Advocate Mukwebane, said that they must be included. Then the draft prepared during her tenure shouldn't be included in that report. Then this letter, you reported it to the attorneys, and Advocate Baum said that the drafts could not be omitted from the Rule 53 record. After that, you inform, you had the telephone conversation with Advocate Mukwebane, who was opposed to this, even though the legal team was in agreement that these drafts must be included. So why would she, in your opinion, why would she not want her own drafts which were drafted in her tenure and allowed the drafts which were drafted during her predecessor, Advocate Madonsela, to be included in the reports, not hers? Then I'll move also to question to paragraph number 37 of your affidavit. Paragraph 37, when you were removed from the office of the public protector, it was because you were saying too much to the lawyers representing the public protector. Then can you please share with this committee the information that you were sharing with the attorneys, which led to your working relationship to be sour in that office of the public protector? Then we move on to paragraph 40, still on your affidavit, where you mentioned that the public protector advocate Mukhwebane said the evidence that were in the Gupta leaks, shouldn't be included in the investigation. In your own understanding, do you think that the evidence that were there in the Gupta leaks were going to assist in the investigation of the dairy, the Freire dairy? Then also, yesterday you said in one of the meetings, you were not, you were told by the by Advocate Mukhwebane not to record the proceedings of that meeting, and you were prevented from taking notes when you were in that meeting of the SSA. Was the meeting discussing classified information, or what was it that the meeting was discussing? We would like to hear from yourself, what is it that the meeting was discussing? Paragraph 19, you also said that it was odd for the public protector to meet, to have a one-on-one meeting with one of the attendees in an interview. Is this stipulated in the Public Protectors Act that the public protector is not allowed to meet with anyone, or is it in the Constitution, or is that your opinion? If you can expand on that one. Then you also mentioned that questions that you prepared were disregarded by the PP in that meeting. So is it compulsory for the PP to focus only on the questions that are prepared for her whenever you have a meeting, or is it allowed for her to come up with her own questions? We want to have a better understanding in this regard. Then, paragraph 32 of your affidavit. You said you attended a meeting with Sifanye's attorney. During this meeting, you informed the attorneys of the fact that the recommendation in the CX, in the final CX investigation report, had actually been prepared by SSA. What were their reactions to this? Then my last second question would be, based on your investigation experience, is it allowed for the office of the PP to seek and expect advice on a matter like she did with the CX?
Your voice is louder than that.
Oh, hey, we had a very long day,
yeah.
Honorable Chair. I'm saying, is it necessary to get an expert advice with regard to any investigation that the office is conducting, like you did with Mr. Moodle, who is referred to as an economist, is it allowed? Then, according to your knowledge and understanding, Mr. Kekana, who is better placed to deal with the amendment of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa? If you can also assist us in that regard, so that we can all have a better understanding. Nationalization was not part of the scope of the investigation. Would you say extending the mandate of investigation in this instance would constitute improper behavior? Alternatively, is it common practice for the public protector to change the mandate or the scope of any investigation? Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Lakonte. Mr. Kekana?
Yes, Chair, I'm still here. I'm just still recording the last bit of it.
Okay.
Why? Chair, I hope I've captured the questions right. I think in regards to paragraph 33, Chair, I wasn't given any reasons why we shouldn't include the draft reports that we have drafted. No reasons were advanced at all by the PP. She just didn't want them to be included in the record. In regards to paragraph 37, Chair, Chair, the information that I shared with the attorneys, Chair, was in relation to the amendment of the Constitution, Chair. And that's what I recall advising them, and also indicated to them that we received a note from the SSA with the changes, Chair. Chair, in regards to paragraph 40, Chair, we were instructed to follow up on the Gupta leaks. Chair, depending on what we would find, Chair, that was going to determine as to whether that information would assist us or not. But I think if I remember correctly from media articles then, there was mention of Frede in the Gupta links. So Chair, it was a lead that we wanted to follow. And if there was any information that was relevant, we were definitely going to use that information, Chair. Chair, in regards to being told not to take notes or make a recorder of the SSA meeting, Chair, Chair, from my knowledge, the information that we were, or that was discussed in that meeting, was not classified, Chair. As I indicated before, Chair, the discussions mostly centered about the Reserve Bank pre-democratic era, Chair. And Chair, on paragraph 19, Chair, according to my knowledge, there was no written rule per se that one could have a one-on-one meeting with an implicated party. It's not stipulated in the Public Protector Act, it's not stipulated in the Constitution, but the practice of the office was not to have these one-on-one meetings with affected parties in regard to an investigation meeting, Chair. Chair, in regard to the prepared questions, Chair, it was not compulsory for the PP to focus only on those questions. She would use the questions to assist her, and she could also come up with her own questions, Chair. Chair, in regards to paragraph 32, Chair, after I told Sifanyeto Atinis about the FSA amendments, Chair, I remember the reaction was that of shock, but I don't remember the specific words that they responded me by, or the response that I got from Sifanyeto. But I remember that there was some shock from the attorneys. Chair, in regards to my investigation experience regarding experts, Chair, we are allowed, Chair, to seek an expert if required, Chair, and that is allowed, Chair. Chair, in regards to the constitutional amendment, Chair, I think Parliament or Cabinet is better placed to deal with any amendment of the Constitution, Chair. Chair, also in regards to nationalization, Chair, Chair, I believe that it was not in our scope to follow that line or that theory, Chair, and it was wrong of us to follow that course of line in regards to nationalization. And yes, I do believe that the scope of the investigation did change because of that, Chair. I'm not so sure whether I've captured everything, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Paragraph 40.
Is that something that he missed responding to?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Still on the, he said on this paragraph of his affidavit, much of the evidence needed for the investigation was contained in the leaked emails of members of the Gupta family, known in the media as the hashtag Gupta Leaks. Then my question was, if they were not prevented from taking that evidence from these Gupta leaks, was this going to assist with the investigation?
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Kagan?
Chair, we did believe that it was going to just assist with the investigation.
Thank you. Honorable Maneli?
Thank you, Chair. Greetings, Mr. Kekana.
Good afternoon, Honorable Member.
Good afternoon, Chair. I would want to just start by ascertaining first with regard to the two reports, and this is a matter I would want to also conclude with. Were these reports or investigations, let me refer to the investigations as a starting point, were these investigations done before you were involved in the investigations, Mr. Kekana? Secondly, were these done before the current public protector we are now referring to, meaning they were done by the predecessor in that regard? So I just want that to be again ascertained, that that's the case.
Chair, yes, we both the CX investigation and the Freddie Dairy report or the Freddie Dairy investigations, the both investigations happened before the public protector advocate Madon Mukhwebane was appointed as the public protector. So we inherited both investigations.
So in that score, just to follow that up, isn't it that then the expectation would be there were handover reports that would have been laid as the basis for you to continue with the investigation?
Yes, Chair, I agree there were handover investigations that we needed to finalize. That's correct, Chair.
So in that score, Chair, I'll start then from the Friede report. Just to check there again, you've made reference to, I think most members would have spoken to this, of being instructed to remove certain information which included politicians. Are these so-called adverse findings you're referring to emanating from the handover reports, or they are emanating from an investigation that you yourself has undertaken?
Chair, they were emanating from draft reports that were before our time, Chair.
So would you say that in essence, the first task that was given by Mr. Ndoh was really to alter what was in the report handed over to you by so-called Mr. Cilier?
Chair, the first task that we were given was that we should follow up on the Gupta leaks, Chair. And later on, Chair, we were instructed not to follow up on them anymore, Chair. And then later on, Chair, we received an instruction from Mr. Ndoh, I think. This would be just before we reviewed or removed most of the things in the report. Just before that, we received another instruction from Mr. Ndoh that we were to remove any adverse findings in the report, Chair.
Would you then, Mr. Kekana, say that you yourself personally, given your experience as an investigator, you would have agreed with these adverse findings, and that's the reason you are raising with the committee on the instruction to remove them?
I had no reason to believe that the previous investigators who had made the findings that they had made inaccurate findings. I myself was just to proceed with the investigation, and if there was or there would be evidence that would indicate that the adverse findings were incorrect, then we would amend that. But from our point of view, Chair, we moved with what we were handed with, or what we received.
Maybe, Chair, just to complete that point, as it relates to the leaks and the instruction not to follow that through, I'm just looking at what this committee is expected to look at. Was this based on the legality of how this information was obtained? Or are you trying to demonstrate that this was a deliberate move to withhold information to weaken the strength of the investigation or the actual report at the end?
Okay, I'm not really sure. As I indicated before, we were not given any reasons as to why we should remove these adverse findings, Chair.
Maybe put differently, Chair, as an investigator who needed to use this, would you yourself say you believe that this information was from a test of legality and how you obtain it usable for you to make decisions?
Sorry, Chair, can I get that again?
I'm asking Mr. Kekan, does you yourself, besides the instruction given on these leaks, is it information that you believed should be used, I think, from a point of legality on how this information would have been obtained?
Chair, ours, especially on the Gupta leaks, was to follow up on that lead, get the information, assess the information, and if we were to find that the information was credible, we would have used it. And if the information had no value, we wouldn't have used it, Chair.
Just again on Mr. Ndo, as I complete my questions on this one, on the Mr. Ndo question. You took the instructions, you indicated that you didn't question those. Just the role of Mr. Ndo, I just wanted to check whether it's been common practice that you would ask that certain information be removed from the reports and it will go as such, or it is just an experience on this matter?
My experience was that usually we would be given reasons as to why we would remove something from a report. But in this instance, no reasons were advanced. We were just informed by Mr. Ndo that we had to remove the information.
But then, Mr. Kekana, I just wanted to check if that's like common in practice that this would happen, because I'm also trying to establish why we didn't discharge the duty of a public official to check if something is unlawful, that you are able to say no.
Chair, I couldn't say no, and especially if Mr. Ndo indicated that the instruction came from the PP, Chair. And Chair, I just acted according to what we were instructed to do, Chair. As I indicated, Chair, usually when we remove things from a report or from a Section 7-9 notice, it would be informed by facts or evidence. But in this instance, no reasons or facts were provided to us for such a removal, Chair.
Would you then believe that those omissions or removals would have had a material impact in the investigation or the final report.
Chair, I agree with that statement.
Then, having not raised this even with the PPE to validate whether Mr. Ndou's instructions are indeed lawful, any other avenue that you would have used, you've already described your relationship with the PPE at the time, but any other avenue you would have used where you think these are like unlawful instructions that may compromise even what you referred to as standard operating procedures in the office?
Chair, I don't think there was any kind of procedure as to where internal staff could report the behavior of the public protector. So, Chair, I didn't report it to anyone at that stage up until I made the protected disclosure affidavit.
That's on 42, again, the meeting in the boardroom. Here it is not Mr. Ndou or hearsay that Mr. Ndou says this. Here you are saying it's a direct instruction to remove certain information from the report. I just want to check it again. At this point, where it's a direct instruction, the matter of politicians involved would have not arisen.
Chair, in that meeting, I don't remember the issue of politicians arose. I think we focused on other things since we had already received that instruction for politicians.
No, thank you, Chair. I don't want to get back to the other report on the bank. Maybe the starting point...
You're towards your limit.
Yes, yes. The starting point will be on the PLF included in the investigation when it is not supposed to. I just want to check it from the other side. Would you have regarded this as a way of, I'm saying, from what is expected also from a public protector, protecting the public and listening to what the public would raise, that it was merely that exercise, and that is why it would have not even made it into your report?
I can agree to that proposition that maybe the public protector was just or wanted to hear an organization on what they could possibly contribute. So I would agree that that might be the case, Chair.
Yeah, maybe my second last question, Chair, will relate to the SSA meeting. I just wanted to check there. You continuously said no recording and this was not in the report. My question would be that this was an opportunity, as you stated, to hear the other side of the story. What did you rely on then to the finalization of the report in the absence of this part?
Well, there was nothing basically, Chair. As I indicated in my earlier testimony, we did expect a written submission from the SSA, and we really never got it. So what I think was indicated in the report was statements made in the provisional report, Chair, if I'm not mistaken, Chair.
My last point, Chair, like I said, I will come to conclude with this point as I started with it. In both reports, would it be correct to draw a conclusion, taking into account that the Reserve Bank investigation looked at something, and at the end you ended up having even amendments about the Constitution and all that, Then on the field side, you also had removals that also changed the report. Would it be correct then to draw the conclusion on both reports, which are inherited, when it's been handed over, that necessarily you are saying those reports would have been altered from what could have been originally the intention of the two investigations submitted? Thank you.
In general, I would agree with that assessment.
Okay, thank you. Advocate Mpofu, if I may get your attention. Thank you.
Yes, sir. I'm here, Charles. Sorry.
Thank you. No, I just wanted to attend to the query that you had registered and indicate that as you would have witnessed that from day one of these hearings, we were very clear about this committee starting with no predetermination on anything. And secondly, I am very much alive to the fact that you would have spent considerable amount of time, especially yesterday, not only canvassing, but also at the end, you did register your own dispute on the issue of the Protected Disclosure Act. So that has not gone unnoticed and is registered as such as a dispute. And further, to make the point that this committee is still going to have deliberations on everything else that would have been placed in front of it, and that there is no member, including its chairperson, that will preempt those deliberations. So if your point was to register that and redirect the chair to that dispute, the chair is well directed to that dispute. I wanted to make that point before I allow you.
No, thank you, Chair. No, I'm happy with that, Chair. I just wanted to remember, this is a public process, Chair, where it's not just all of us in the theoretical room. And so, Chair, it's really incorrect. There's no other way to describe it. That's to say, Chairperson, that this witness, for example, the reason I let him get away with calling this thing a protected disclosure, because he says he doesn't even know whether the speaker is a member of the cabinet or not. That's fine. We can argue all that at the end, as you say, Chair. But you know that the speaker is not a member of the cabinet. So for you to then sound as if, and that's why I started by saying, Chair, maybe it was a slip of the tongue. I was not suggesting anything more than that. But to sound a neutral person, if there's a whole dispute which takes 10, 15 minutes about whether this is a protected disclosure or not, or whether it's black or it's white, and then the chairperson then just says, oh, this black thing, that means the other side is being neglected. It's just a simple point that I'm making, and I don't want to make a meal of it. I just want to ask all of us, actually, to be sensitive to those kinds of things. Because, you know, you might say that the open mind, but as we go on, we start to get the impression that, you know, there are fixed positions, and there are even attempts to undo or to re-examine the witness, to undo questions or to repair questions where he was weak. That's all fine because we are not in a court of law, but let's at least take it easy on the predetermination and at least give a semblance of fairness. It's all from a fairness point of view, Chairperson. I'm not accusing you of having done it deliberately.
Understood. Thank you very much. Is there any other point you wanted to make? You said you wanted to make at the end before I
wrap up. I'm recognizing you, Advocate Mpofu.
Oh, sorry, Chair. Sorry, I was talking. I didn't realize that I was muted.
you will have to start again then.
Yes, no, I was saying, Chair, it's a very quick point, and thank you, Honorable Chair. This is the right point at which I should make that point. And again, it's for your consumption, but also for the public out there to follow all the steps that we're taking. You would have, Chair, received a detailed letter from us yesterday. You remember that the letter I had promised you, and I said we were still putting a few editing touches.
Yes, yes.
Yes, it was sent and acknowledged by your office, Chair, yesterday. And it raises quite fundamental issues, and the purpose of the letter, I'm not going to discuss it now. The purpose of the letter, as it says, is for you to table it at your meeting in the next couple of days. The only reason I'm raising the issue now is because one of the issues raised there, I think there are six broad issues that are raised there. Two or three of them might have been issues where we were bolstering some of the issues we raised at the beginning. And another two or three might be completely new issues. You will deal with it in your own meeting. The only relevant or importance of raising it now is because one of the issues that we raised sharply in that letter is the fairness and reasonableness of this procedure of interposing questions after every witness to Advocate Mkhwebane before she gives evidence. And
yes.
I do understand that that ruling is still stands as we speak now, but I just want to indicate once again that procedure is completely unheard of and completely unfair, because if it goes like that, by the time we have to give evidence, we might have been asked questions about everything else. So there might even be no point in giving any evidence, number one. Number two, we are still preparing. There are still witnesses. We don't want to precognize, as we call it, witnesses about certain information. I'll give you an example. Mr. Pillay, who is still going to testify, his evidence is almost related to that of Mr. Van Lochenbeck. So if we are going to be dealing with those issues, then Mr. Pillay will be recognized of everything that we have, of the answers, and be able to tailor his evidence accordingly. And that is inherently unfair. And I'm simply saying this, that's why I'm saying this is the correct time to raise what I'm raising, Chair, because I suspect that this is where you might want to allow people to do exactly that which we wish to record is inherently unfair. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Advocate Mpofu. You have registered quite a number of points, and fortunately you derive them from the letter that will be for the attention of the committee tomorrow, and we will certainly attend to those issues as the committee. Thank you for that. Advocate Bauer, I see you at your hand up.
I was asked a question earlier, but I'm not sure what the question was precisely. My apologies. One member asked at the end, the evidence leader should address the question relating to the transcript of the Rule 53 record.
It was Honorable Olumisa.
No.
Not that. Okay, you forgot about the question.
I've forgotten the question.
You want to remind her, Honorable, not that?
Yes, Chair.
Just please do.
Yes, Advocate Bauer, I referred to paragraph 33 of Mr. Kekane's evidence or affidavit, if you want to put it that way. And paragraph 33 of that affidavit indicates a telephone conversation that took place between him and advocate Mkhwebane regarding the Rule 53 record not being produced, particularly from her own investigation for the SIX report. So I was asking whether we could get a recording of that or a transcript of that particular conversation to ascertain what the reasons behind the non-disclosure of that particular report was, particularly in the review proceedings.
Did you get that, Advocate Bauer?
I did, but I think we must ask the witness whether he has a recording of that telephone conversation, because we certainly don't have it in our possession.
When you say the witness, Mr. Kekan. Okay. Thank you, Advocate Bauer. A quick one, Mr. Kekan. Did you hear that? Do you have that recording?
No, Chair. I don't have that recording, Chair.
Okay. Thank you. Honorable Mulder.
Thank you, Chairperson. Through you, if I may just get clarity from Advocate Mpofu to understand what he's saying with regard to the evidence by the public protector. Obviously, the public protector plays a central role in these proceedings. And he argued that in terms of fairness, it would not be fair to allow questions being asked to her throughout the process. Now, we've got our own meeting to discuss the process forward. I want to understand. I think we're dealing with a deal process. On the one hand, written questions or questions can be asked to the public protector. That happened earlier last week, if I remember correctly.
Friday.
And the indication was that it will be done in writing. I understand. That's one process. The other process would be where the public protector gives evidence in person, like the other witnesses have done so far, and that's a different process. Do I understand Advocate Mpofu correctly? Are you indicating to the committee that the public protector is going to give evidence in person directly? And because of that, we should not proceed now with questions that demand written replies. I'm just trying to understand what he's saying.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. I'll recognize you. Please go ahead.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. I'm sorry about that, sir. Yes, no, thank you, Honorable Mulder. That's quite an important question. Yes, indeed, Honorable Mulder. What I'm saying is the system that has been adopted of asking the public protector to give answers in between every witness is inherently unfair for the reasons that I've articulated both just now and also in the letter which will be tabled before you. So I don't want to get into that in great detail. And you will recall that I raised this on day one. And my proposal, which was obviously rejected by the committee or the chair or both, was that the public protector, the questions obviously should be posed, but that those questions be answered either when she gives evidence, or I think I can't remember the actual wording of the amendment we were suggesting, or we said 5 days after she indicates that she will not give evidence. And I said on Monday, that is exactly to avoid the kind of situation what we find ourselves in now, where we are going to be having, because you run out of that 5 days or 7 days or whatever the chair might regard to be the reasonable time, at points that are randomly selected just by coincidence. And therefore you might have to give those answers before, for example, critical witnesses on a particular point. And it just distorts the entire hearing. I've never heard of such a procedure in my entire life in any proceedings of whatever shape or form. And the only justification that has been given for it is the fact that the public protector accounts to Parliament, which is true. But this is not that type of accounting mechanism. This committee has a specific mandate to ascertain the veracity of the charges. And therefore, we can't use it for the normal accounting functions. And therefore, insofar as it has a specific function, that function must be done in a fair manner of an inquiry, because it is an inquiry. It might happen that next week the public protector is called into the whatever committee she normally accounts to account. That's fine. But this process here must be, we must guard jealously its fairness, because otherwise it will be a mockery if she has to come, let's say, a month later, but three quarters of the evidence has been given in briefs and verbs after each witness, quite apart from wasting time in a process like that. It's just inherently unfair. So yes, Honorable Mulder, you've understood my point properly.
Thank you. Thank you, Advocate Mpofu. I don't want us to get into any discussion on that. I think the point raised was to clarify, to understand what was being placed by Advocate Mpofu. I think we'll leave it there. We'll have our own consideration when we with our own house matters and reflection on the process in our own meeting. Yes, Advocate Mpofu, you still want to speak?
No, just a quick one on a lighter note. I was going to, I noticed that Honorable Mulder did not take the opportunity to ask questions in that session last week. So I hope everyone can follow his example. Thank you.
I won't go to Honorable Mulder because I think you were here today. Members in their own way had a particular way to deal with this. So we're not going to follow Honorable Mulder. They'll follow what they determined to do.
Thank you.
Please don't push us. Don't push us. some corner. Thank you, Advocate Mpofu. Mr. Kekana.
Yes, Chair, I'm still here, Chair.
Still there.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. We have concluded our interaction as a committee with you, full 2 days, since yesterday and today. We want to thank you for your participation. High level of discipline and hopefully this is going to assist the committee in its own work that it has been set up to do. We really appreciate the role you're playing as this committee. So with that, want to thank you and at this point to excuse you. It's been a full 2 days. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I'm much obliged.
Anything you want to say?
No, Chair. Thank you. Everybody have a pleasant evening, Chair.
You sure you don't want us to just do another 20 minutes?
Chair, that's not a good joke, Chair.
Thank you very much,
I'm available, Chairperson.
No, won't go there. You are excused.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you all.
Thank you. The time now is 20 minutes past 6. Honorable members, if there's no other issue from the evidence leader and Advocate Mpofu, I would want to conclude this meeting with a brief remark that I would have held back. You fine? Come again?
And now we're resuming the hearings. Let's confirm the time.
Please do that. Mailam and then Matlaole, before, as you prepare to do that.
Thank you, Chairperson, and I think Honourable Mahwale was before me, but I thank you. Chairperson, my question is this. So I know that we're going to discuss it tomorrow, what Advocate Mpofu raised. But in the meantime, the situation is that the directive stands. And as such, we do, as members, have a right in terms of that directive to question Advocate Mkhwebane and Advocate Mpofu over the evidence that we've heard over the last 2 days. So are we going to get that opportunity now, or when will we get that opportunity?
Well, I did not, because I think there were only two people who indicated that. So I'd gone, don't try your luck. It was only Honorable Heron, and I don't know who, it was not you.
Me, Chair, it was me.
No. No, I think it being this time, and I'll check Honorable Heron if he feels strong about continuing that.
Recording in progress.
Now,
okay. I'm going to appeal to you to hold them, Honorable Nodat. Hopefully, that won't be a train smash for you. Are you okay with that?
Yeah, that's fine, Chair.
Thank you. Advocate Bauer?
Chair, I addressed my...
Duglibele?
Yeah.
Okay, Mika. Honorable Slamatown.
Because you were closing, Chair, and you wanted to make remarks, I only wanted directives on tomorrow's meeting. Is it the same arrangement or virtual? So that you close your meeting in...
Yeah, that will be an announcement, thank you, Father, when I'm done. So you're a bit ahead of me if it has not been communicated already. Thank you. Advocate Bauer?
Hey. Maybe if this could be raised with the committee tomorrow, we set to adjourn, I think Advocate Mpofu asked for 3 days, and then 2 days is the Western Cape High Court hearings. So we set to adjourn on the 27th. Or to come back to this on the 27th and resume. I have essentially two questions. Are we tacking on the 5 days that is lost at the end? In other words, the next week, because it would assist us in sorting our diaries. And the second thing is, we have a program. The reality of the progress that we've made up to now is an indication that the evidence is not going to be finished on the program as predetermined, and the committee needs to have a conversation about that when they meet tomorrow as well. And as things stand now, we're back on the 27th.
Yes, that will be finalized after tomorrow, because the amendment of the program is in front of the committee tomorrow. So thank you for that. I was alerted to your hand, Advocate Mpofu.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Another quick one. I agree with what my learned friend has said, and I'm sure the committee will relook the program as you indicated. I just wanted to flag from the letter that we have raised an issue there about the possibility of the case next week running over into a third day. We have been written to the court as well in respect of that, and that issue will probably be resolved around about Thursday as to whether it's going to be 2 days or 3 days. We will find a way to keep in touch with you, Chair, on that. But I think in fairness, want to raise it that there might be, if the court hearing spills over, then it might mean that we resume on the 28th. I don't want it to be discussed now. It's in the letter. I'm just flagging it up because I know people's diaries are quite difficult to manage and we're dealing with too many people. So we should raise these things as early as possible. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Advocate Mbofu, to be considered, hopefully, if we can get from our legal services team that clarity tomorrow morning. Temi Mosingoma, can you just announce tomorrow's meeting? Is it virtual or hybrid? Thank you, Chair. Good evening, Honorable Members. As some of the members have already accepted my meeting invitation, Chair, the meeting is virtual and it's starting at 10, ending at 1 o'clock tomorrow. So please, members, don't come to the venue. There will be no one here. Thank you. Thank you. There you get it, Honorable Mashaule. With that, colleagues, I think that's where we will pause. And I think I'm even holding back on the points I was going to make. I'll make them first thing in the meeting tomorrow, in our committee meeting. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.